guys, and welcome back to an episode of Comic Book Legion Podcast. I am, of course, your host, Clay, but I'm not the only... Man, I can't even talk this morning. I'm not your only host. I am also with Mark. What's up, man?
Que pasa?
Hey, man.
How you doing?
I am doing great. I am really excited about these books that we are going to be talking about today. I binged them all last night, and they are fresh in my mind. I actually took notes because of how good some of these books
were.
Damn,
you took notes?
Yeah.
I remember that I used to take notes podcasting.
Yeah.
But then I felt like I never paid attention to them, because since I'm kind of a rambler, I mean, it's a bad trait of mine, and you would think, hey, self-discipline guy, look at your notes, you know, be organized. But I feel that the more organized I get rattled. Like, I don't know how to organize my thoughts. So I just speak.
I could see that. Like, you know, you're wanting to, like, read every little thing on your notes, and it just sounds weird, so you want to just be free, but then
yeah. It's
like, oh, well, I forgot this part and this part. You know, that's the one thing I kind of hate about, you know, some of these conversations we have, because I think of something when I'm reading the book, and then I talk to you guys about it, and then I remember that one thing immediately after we stop recording, and it's like, dang it. So
yeah, that happens a lot. Like when those comebacks, whenever you're arguing with somebody, but you think of the perfect comeback like 3 weeks later, she's like, oh, I hope we have this argument again, because I'm going to use it.
Oh, that reminds me. If you have the chance today, you should look up Shazam, How It Should Have Ended. Oh, my God. That is hilarious. Batman.
Really?
Yes. So Batman has...
How It Should Have... Those are the animated ones, right?
Yeah.
Because they have, like, is it, what's the other one? Honest Trailers or something?
Yeah,
like
Honest
that?
Trailers. I think it's the same guys. I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think I've seen the animated one several times.
Yeah. It's the same Batman and Superman that are, like, in the coffee shop or whatever. It's those guys.
Okay.
But this one is super hilarious. So, Shazam, How It Should Have Ended. Make sure to look it up today.
I'll check it out. Man, I was really pumped because right before the show, my wife put on top of my desk, and I'm like, oh, snap. All right, clearly a comic came in. But, I mean, sometimes comics come in, and I don't know if it's because I bought them or if they're being, like, gifted.
Yeah.
Like, for example, like, the deceased one, the one that you ended up getting me.
Yeah, and
but then I'm like, no, because the thing is that it came from, like, Amarillo, Texas. So I'm like, who the heck? I'm like,
wait,
right,
it came from Amarillo?
Yeah.
That's the shop that I buy from.
Really?
Yeah.
But it said Nation of Nerds, though.
Yeah, that's crazy. I did not put your name on. I put my mailing address to all that stuff. So DC probably said, hey, I didn't even think about this, because some shops have specific covers, you know, variant covers. I always thought that DC... like the actual place, DC, would just send it to the people who need gifts or whatever.
Well, I mean, normally I get it, and it comes from, like, Burbank.
Yeah.
But this one specifically, I mean, I have gotten one before that came from somewhere else. But when I saw Texas, I'm like, all right, I could have sworn that you're San Antonio, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, no, he's San Antonio. I'm like, but this is Texas. So maybe this, I don't know what it, I'm like, cool, man, Clay. That's why I took the picture and I put it on our Comic Book Legion chat.
Yeah, no.
Because I was doing it as, like, a thank you to you.
Amarillo.
Like, so I received it.
Yeah, Amarillo is where that Unknown Comics place is. That's the...
Good grief.
That's the variant for Unknown Comics. So...
Well, there you go. So I don't know. But since it said Nation of Nerds on top, I'm like, okay. So when you're like, I know, Mark, you did not buy this when I showed you. I'm like, dude, I didn't buy this, but I did buy this.
Oh,
and I got this one today.
The Midtown?
Which is from Midtown Comics with the Lois Lane. I mean, I was telling my wife, I'm like, babe, how can I be? Because she's like, babe, you just spent $10 on this one comic. I'm like, babe, how can I call myself a Superman fan? And I don't buy this. This is like Death of Superman everything, just in deceased form.
I really like that cover, but it's a little bit darker and it has the Omega symbol on it.
Yeah, well, there's also another one that it's like the Virgin, but it's meant to be connecting. So I think all six, because also Midtown has the next one for number two.
And it's Red Hood and Joker, right?
Yeah, with the crowbar.
Yes.
Yeah. So the thing is that, so I bought the connected one. So what I'm going to do is, I guess for the first one, since I already have this one here in my house, I'm not going to buy the connecting one. It'll say deceased. So then the connecting ones will just connect with this one. So they can just know it's from deceased. That'll be my story.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So So I guess I shouldn't say thank you to you yet for the comic, because I haven't received your comic, man.
So those, what I do is I order them, of course, 2 months in advance. And then the really heartbreaker is that they wait until the last week of that month to set, okay, to set up the shipment. And then I get it the first week of the next month.
Okay.
So I
so then I guess what we're just going to have to do is either, you know, maybe this might be just our next giveaway for our Comic Book Legion staff of contributors.
Uh-huh.
You know, so if you are interested in getting these kind of goodies, come and join us. ComicBookLegion.com. Join our team. We love chatting comics. We talk sports. What else do we? We talk about a whole bunch of crap.
We talk about a lot of things. I mean, the biggest thing to talk about recently, of course, has been both Endgame and Game of Thrones. Just because those two things are really big right now. But, man, this fall, we're going to be talking a lot about Watchmen.
Yes, we are. Oh, dude, that trailer.
I know.
I was pleasantly surprised. I was watching it, and I'm like, man, it's got like a really cool futuristic Watchmen vibe.
Uh-huh.
But I was like, man, Jeremy Irons looks really good as Ozzy.
Oh, dude, he looks like so like lean and ripped.
Yeah.
Like, it's
crazy. I was like, man, I think I said that on the chat. I'm like, dude, did he get ripped for this role? I don't know. Maybe Irons is always in great shape. I mean, the guy is Alfred. But I'm just saying, like, in a way, I was like, man, when I saw him. But yeah, that trailer, I don't know why. There's something about seeing that Watchmen yellow that just gets me excited.
Yeah, I really like
the
color scheme.
I don't even like the color yellow. But there's something about Watchmen yellow.
Yeah, no.
It gets me pumped.
Like I said, I like the color scheme of, like, the visual of the actual like show. It looks really, really nice. It makes the yellow pop, and I think that's the reason why. But let's go ahead and get started with these books, because I'm way too excited about this first one we're going to talk about. So it's going to be Batman and the Outsiders, and from what I see now, I will say oh my gosh, the writer, Brian Hill, right?
Yeah, Brian Michael.
Yeah. It doesn't say it on the cover, so I'm hoping it can become an ongoing, but it might change into a miniseries. That's just how books go. If they don't do well on the first issue or whatever, they'll cut it short. I'm really hoping this is an ongoing, just because of what contained inside.
Yeah, the thing with comics now, what I'm noticing, mainly with, I mean, it's hard to say with Marvel, because Marvel can have like four issues and then go back to a number one.
Yeah.
So I don't really know their scheme. But what I've noticed is, in the sense of, I don't feel like DC is going indie. But I see that they're kind of capitalizing on like the Maxi series.
Yeah.
So pretty much like kind of like what Tom King has done with Vision, or, you know, what he has recently done with Mr. Miracle, and now whatever his new project is. You have Jimmy Olsen is going to be a Maxi series. You have Lois Lane's going to be a Maxi series. So they're the 12 issues. So I think they're going to be, and in a way, I don't really mind if they do Maxi series, mainly because you get a really, really good tight, normally, you get a tight story.
Yeah.
So, as I don't want to see, unless a story like this spans into these characters getting an expanded role in the DC universe,
mm-hmm,
then I guess you could say I'm okay with it if that is the case, if it is 12 issues and you just get a freaking awesome 12 issues.
Yeah.
But I don't want it to be where they have their 12 issues and then they're gone. And you don't see them again. So yeah. I guess it's a double-edged. But is this every 2 weeks or monthly?
I have not seen that yet. So we will see. Let me just say this. I'm going to go ahead and say that this is going to be my book of the week because of three reasons. Reason number one, the first cover. Tyler Kirkham is one of my favorite artists. Reason number two, the second cover, because Stefan Sajic is one of my favorite artists. And reason number three, the interior art, Dexter Soy, is now one of my new favorite artists.
Yeah, Dexter Soy, man, ever since his work with on Red Hood, Red Hood and the Outlaws was awesome. I mean, the way that he was able to... Like, Red Hood is one of those books that you should not feel any sorts of emotions, you would think. Especially with the way that, you know, Scott Lobdell wrote it during the New 52. Mm-hmm. But there is something that he did with Artemis and Bizarro. That the way that he was able to tell a story, but the way that Dexter Soy was able to, you know, show you, visually tell you a story, it was gorgeous. And I was really bummed to see he was leaving,
mm-hmm.
even though I do like Pete Woods. But when I saw that he was taking over this book, I'm like, dang, okay, so Brian Hill is an up-and-comer. And pretty much everything that he writes is really, really good. Then you're comparing it now with a writer, with an artist, who is freaking awesome in Dexter Soy. I gotta be honest, I am not too familiar with Veronica Gandini, the colorist. But I love her. I love the colors.
Oh, they worked like so good together. And yes,
it was very, very good.
For me, there are very specific panels that I'm looking at that make me appreciate this story as far as the art goes. The very first one is, I think, on like page three of the main story, so page five, because the two ads or whatever in the front.
Yeah, yeah.
When this villain is holding up, what's her name?
Yeah, the girl's dad. I don't even... Sophia, I believe.
So when not Sophia's dad, but when he's holding Sophia, just the shading, the color palette, and everything right there on that last panel looks so gorgeous to me. It looks so good. And then, of course, when you see Black Lightning in action for the first time, shooting lightning at that Juggernaut-type character, I legit thought that was Juggernaut the first time I saw him in the preview pages, like a week before or whatever.
So not Nemesis from Resident Evil?
Oh, yeah, that too.
I don't know. That's when I was like, damn, that looks like Nemesis. But clearly it's not.
So I really, really appreciated the art. Really appreciated the story. For me, I did not read Detective until 1000. So I know that there was like basically I know there was a backdoor pilot to this series. And I want to say it was like 87.
It was before Tomasi.
Yeah, it was like 986, 987, somewhere around there.
I think he did like four issues.
Yeah, he did those three or four issues to kind of jumpstart this. And I know that I probably would have appreciated it a little bit more just because they did call back to some of that stuff. For instance,
they mentioned Karma.
Yeah, I had no clue who Karma was. I know that they showed Karma in these little flashbacks that Duke is having throughout the book. He's kind of having a little bit of like a PTSD type thing with him or her. I don't know if Karma is a guy or a girl.
No, it's a guy.
Okay. And it's... For me, it wasn't too confusing to jump in with this number one. That's the... I think one of the biggest things is when people say, oh, this is a continuing story. Well, I can't read it because I have to read that first. No, this is works really well as something that you can just jump onto because it teaches you, you know, that there was a little bit of back history with this Karma character, and it shows that these people have somewhat of experience working together. And then, of course, they work together for the rest of the book. So I really enjoyed that. From one thing for me that I wrote down, Bruce and Jefferson have a conversation about who's in charge, how are they going to do this, the whole thing with the team. And Bruce is basically just super laid back. He's like, I don't have to do anything because this is your team. And I want to know, why isn't it called Black Lightning and the Outsiders if it's Jefferson's team?
I mean, I'm guessing it's the title because we know for some reason that people don't like originals, like original things.
Yeah.
So, you know, Batman and the Outsiders is just a very classic title. Yeah. And I feel like putting Batman's name on it will guarantee a boost in sales no matter what, even though if they're sprinkling him in, unfortunately, that's just the case. But, you know, it is what it is. But in terms of like everything that's going on with Bruce and Jefferson, and you see a lot that although Jefferson has all these questions, he even mentions that, you know, I don't really trust Batman, which is interesting because what this is letting me know, which is something that you missed in Detective Comics in that run, was there was this moment that when Batman I believe it was Bruce Wayne, when he was leaving, when Jefferson kind of turns around, Superman's like floating in the sky. You know, he's doing his hovering thing and he approaches Jefferson and he tells him to be careful because, you know, there's situations like this, or working with like a Bruce can kind of like change you, or it can consume you and it can make you lose, you know, like, yes, I'm paraphrasing, but he's kind of like, you can kind of lose yourself a little bit.
Mm.
So he's like, no matter what it is that you do, like, you know, listen to your instincts and all this kind of stuff, but just be careful. Which was interesting because this literally happened right when Batman left.
Yeah.
And Jefferson's like, oh man, I got this team. I'm like partnering. But it's kind of like, if you're going to partner with Batman, you kind of have to know everything.
Yeah.
You know, what's going on, because there's always three or four different layers. But in terms of the story, like parts that I really enjoyed, I actually really enjoyed the Sophia character because I love the fact that it looks like there's a DC version of like mutants.
Yes.
Like people that don't know what kind of powers they have, or, you know, like you, because that kind of helps in anything. That can kind of feel like the whole in the beginning of Rebirth with like the Speed Force when people were just getting zapped by lightning.
Yeah.
Like you don't know how these people are just getting these powers, but clearly that dude in the beginning, he knows. And he's like, you have no idea how powerful you are. So we have like a DC version of like a Phoenix. So it's like those little things. I mean, to me, I loved seeing that Duke is still dealing with the after effects of falling into a trap and getting his butt whooped. Mm-hmm. And almost dying, pretty much. I like seeing that. I just feel that, I don't know. It felt like that one was kind of like a little bit too on the nose in terms of, like, you know how it's like, it feels predictable. That you're going to just have everybody not being on the team and no one cares about Black Lightning, like, listening. But then there's always, like, hey, but let's join together. Like, I rather have it be where it felt a little bit more of a struggle for, like, multiple issues. Instead of it just being, like, okay, clearly this is a team that has to trust each other.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like it just being thrown in there, like, too quickly.
You know, and...
But...
I like that aspect also. I liked how... In the beginning, I kind of made this joke on Twitter already, but I'm just going to say it here. I always thought the idea of Thomas being called the Signal was really cool just because of what it was supposed to be. He was supposed to be like the Batman of the day or whatever. But how many times throughout this book do you think that they're going to make a plan and they're going to say, go on my Signal? And Thomas is going to be like, wait, is that supposed to be me? Like, what do you mean? I feel like it's going to get very tiresome for him. But besides that, I really enjoyed Sophia's character because it has a lot to expand on.
Yes.
Batman told the story of how there was this facility that was taking or kidnapping homeless people and poor... low-income families, and giving them these powers. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, with this family in particular that we learn about this book, the mother passed away from the ramifications of the procedures, and it was just the father and the daughter. We We saw the father die in the very beginning of this issue, and we learn that Sophia has basically the power to grow stronger with the more pain that she feels. And for me, I think that's really cool, because we have to ask the question, is that physical pain or emotional pain? Because if she can drive on emotional pain, she doesn't even have to get physically hurt to be super strong. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, because like with Hulk, you know, the angrier he gets.
Yeah. Exactly.
Not MCU Hulk, but, you know, like comic book Hulk.
Yeah.
You know, you got to get, you know, the angrier he gets, you know, the stronger he gets. So, yeah, I thought Sophia and, you know, whoever this dude is that, you know, they introduce at the end, and it looks like, based on the tease, it looks like his name is Ishmael, but he's from the future.
No. So he says his name is,
did he say his name?
Yeah, I wrote it down. He says that...
Oh, call me Caliber.
Yeah.
Caliber.
Yeah.
That's what it was. Okay.
And I did a little bit of research.
Okay.
Caliber, because I was like, I want to see if this is true, because he said he's from the future. So I'm like, we've had plenty of future stories everywhere in the DC universe, whether that be pre-52, new 52, and whatever. This Caliber, as far as his like character design, has not been introduced before. So
this is like a first appearance.
Yeah.
So this is like Abraham from The Walking Dead meets Cable.
Exactly. He looks really, really cool. I like his character design.
He looks good.
He looks to be like some sort of like cyborg android type thing. So I'm really excited to see what all comes out of this. I'm hoping to see really good character development with the team. I know that Brian Hill does that a whole lot. He knows exactly how to push characters, and so I really, really am enjoying to see all that.
And what I'm really interested in is if this dude came from the future, he says the name Ra's al Ghul. And he's like, you know, Ra's al Ghul, it's the name of the most like dangerous man that you will ever know. And he's like, and men will stop at nothing to do like his plan and his deed. So what I'm trying to see is like, what has Ra's al Ghul done that that Caliber knows that will make him want to come back to save this girl?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm all for that. Like, I love that. Like, I love the fact of introducing new characters in a clever way.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like how we're seeing here, because I don't know. I love the fact of seeing kind of like a form, you know, maybe it might not be by like a mutant gene, but if anything, having like a DC version of like somewhat mutants, because I don't buy the Doom Patrol as like the DC version of the X-Men.
But yeah, I never really saw that.
Yeah, but with this, I kind of see it a little bit more, and I loved it, man. I thought this was a really strong number one. It was worth the wait, since it got delayed in 2 or 3 months, but it was worth the wait. It was a great issue, and I'm all for it, man. I dug it.
For sure.
Now, what I did love, which is a book that you have mentioned when I was kind of like reaching out, trying to figure out like a co-host, there was one thing that you said. No matter what book comes out, we have to talk about Hawkman.
Yes.
Yes. That is a tradition that you wanted to talk about. And you know what? Hawkman has, for these 12 issues, have been probably the strongest DC comic title consistently since it started. And I have to say, as somebody during DC Rebirth who couldn't stand Brian Hitch and what he did with Justice League, I hated it.
Ugh.
With a passion. I thought Justice League was horrible. I'm like, dude, this is supposed to be like the flagship title, and it sucks.
The darkness.
I have to say that what Brian Hitch, I'm really going to miss him, because when I think of Hawkman, I think of what Brian Hitch has created. And I gotta say, this issue didn't have the, because you know the last issue it ended with Edom, when you thought that Carter killed him and Edom was able to come back, and he was like, you know, getting ready to just wreak absolute hell.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, this issue was an all-out war. I love the beginning where you're kind of seeing where Edom and the first incarnation of Katar.
Yes.
And they're kind of talking, and you're kind of seeing a little bit of the ideologies while you're seeing the journal, Carter's journal, which has been a theme since the beginning, talking about how he was and how worlds change, how people change, and how he has changed. Like, I really loved that. And now you're going to the all-out battle. And I have to say, the way that Robert Venditti wrote this battle, even though Idam was absolutely no threat, I didn't even care about the other incarnations going up against the like the Deathbringers, like the machines. I didn't even, honestly, I didn't even care about that. Because I was absolutely consumed by seeing a Carter Hall not holding back. And he's like, I might not be able to kill you, but I will kill your will. And the way that he beats them, and by breaking his back, and just doing everything he can by ripping off his one of his wings, I was like, dude, this is, I have never seen Hawkman be so cool. To the point where he beat this man to submission, where he's like, I want my rank back. He's like, tell me who I am.
Yeah, he's like, you know what? Screw this. Do you know, like, you became general because I died, and now I'm still here. So why don't you just tell me, you know, who was I? You know, who am I? And he basically beat him into submission. And
I love it.
And I will admit, I was not the exact opposite of you, because, you know, just like both of us, we are huge Superman fans. The Kryptonian Carter played a big role in this issue.
That actually, that moment was pretty cool when he's like, "Oh, they say that the yellow sun with the Kryptonian, you can shoot laser from the eyes." I was like, "Yeah!"
And he used his heat vision to destroy one of the Deathbringer.
The last one.
Yeah. That was awesome. Absolutely loved it. But the really big twist on this is we saw every single reincarnation of Carter except for one, and we see him here in this book, the original Katar. Yeah. I did not see this coming. I really enjoyed it. You know, seeing literally the growth of a character side by side. And he even says it, you know, we've become so much more than what we are. And he's like, there's one last thing that we need to do before all this
ends. Well,
I love,
actually, before he says that, I love that Carter's like, man, you kind of dug us a really, you know, you dug quite a hole.
oh yeah. Like, he's like, hey, you do know the ramifications of, like, why I have to be here, right? Like, it's because of all the death that we, you know, brought upon as a Deathbringer. Yeah. And he fully says, yes, we have, we did. And he does say there's one last thing that we need to do, and then you start to see all of the Hawkmen, you know, grab their heads. They're all in pain, in some sort of pain, but it's because Carter, the original Carter, is getting every single memory from every single Hawkman. And I think this is going to change a lot for what Hawkman is about. He is no longer the man without a past, which I think is amazing.
Yeah, because now he's got it all.
He's got it
and
all.
I love that splash page when all the memories were coming into, like, one.
Yeah.
Where he was absorbing. I mean, Brian Hitch can kill a splash page. That's his thing. His forte is splash pages.
Yes.
Like that huge, so that double page. So there is just, and you're right, that Kryptonian moment and the Katar moment was great. There was just something about seeing Carter and Idam when he's like, I'll rip generalship from you, piece by piece. There went your spine. Next goes your spirit. I'm a warrior of worlds. My fight spans lifetimes. You never had a chance. I was like, God, yes. Oh, do your thing. And you got, like, Barbados over here destroying. Like, it was just awesome. I love this issue.
It was really, really cool. I really like on the splash page, you know, the colors, the color palette that, I forgot who the colorist is in this book. I think it's in the beginning, Jeremiah, Skipper.
Okay.
The colors that he chose on that splash page, beautiful. I absolutely love it. I love the kind of rocketeer character that is also a part of Hawkman's history. Near the top, I really love the addition of him. But the story after this is very much an epilogue to this entire arc.
Yep.
It just shows that, you know, they were able to incarcerate Idam, but Carter still feels like there's still something there, that there's, you know, still a piece of this journey that still needs to be done. And, you know, Idam says, you know, this was nothing. You know, there's still going to be an entire slaughter to come. And I think that this...
But I love that when he was doing that, he wasn't speaking to Carter. He was speaking to Katar, whose memories are now in Carter.
Yeah.
So I think when you see that last page, when you're seeing a worried Carter, I think it's more because he's like, what? Like, what do I have to deal with now, now that I have all these memories? Because now these can kind of be, like, I don't want to say that Hawkman's going to be like schizo, but now he's probably going to have maybe certain urges and tendencies that he hasn't had before. And that's what's going to make him a very, you know, an interesting character, because
I never thought about that.
Yeah, because now you don't, you honestly, like, that's how I took it at the end. Because if he said, you'll slaughter again Carter, I mean, Idam has no relationship with Carter Hall.
Mm-hmm.
It's all with Katar. So the fact that he's speaking to Carter, but in reality, he's talking to Katar, who's now in his mind, it makes me think that we're going to be seeing different versions of Hawkman all throughout, obviously, the temple of Carter.
Yeah.
Which is, I find that to be... Do you know who the next artist is?
I have no clue who the next artist is. I don't think Venditti...
See, I'm not a solicits guy. No, but I saw it in the previews, because I went to my comic shop this past Wednesday to get the books, and they gave me, like, the preview. Huh. But the thing is, like, I don't read the stories. I'm really just looking at which cover is the one that I'm going to want to buy. So I just looked at the cover, but I didn't look at...
Let me see Hawkman 13.
So, I mean, if you can find that, that would be great.
So, artist, Will Conrad.
Will Conrad. Why do I feel... Well, I mean, Conrad does sound really familiar. I'm trying to figure out now, what book has he done?
Will Conrad has... Oh, he was the...
He's done Batman Beyond, right? Is that Batman Beyond? I don't know why that name sounds familiar. Like, I've read him on Batman Beyond.
No, he did stuff on... he did the Justice League covers. He did the... He looks like more of a covers guy more than an interior.
So he's going to do interiors then?
Yeah, he's doing interiors.
Interesting. Man, I don't know.
It looks like... yeah, because when I typed in Will Conrad, I went quickly to the images to kind of just see if there was something that I recognized. You know what? I think he's done a couple of issues. He did a couple issues of... Oh, the Action Comics Special number 1. So right before Bendis took over, that one shot, he did that.
Okay. All right. That's cool. I mean, I like his work because I actually, when I'm looking at it now, I actually have a couple of issues of Batman Beyond that he's done the interiors on.
But
I knew it was Batman Beyond because that name sounded familiar.
That variant for issue 13, though, holy crap.
Yes. Yeah, so that's the thing. Like, those are the things that I do when I look at the previews from the comic shop. I don't look at the story. I don't even want to know. Just give me...
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So really, really excited to see what all comes out of that. You know, I am not going to doubt Venditti at all, because he did an amazing story for 12 issues. So I'm really excited to see what's coming up next. But let's jump into a very confusing book, Batman Detective. So,
yeah. I loved your tweet. I think was it Wally? He's like, I have no idea who that is.
Yeah. So
and Brad Walker's like, oh, be patient. Like you'll know more to come. I was like, I thought that was clever. He's like, I have no idea. Like,
well, like in that episode of the Justice League Unlimited. Lex Luthor takes over the Flash's body. And so when Lex Luthor takes off the mask of the Flash and he looks in the mirror, he sees Wally's face and he's like, I have no clue who this is. Because Wally isn't like an important figure outside of being the Flash. So
yeah.
If he would have been like Barry Allen and like a CSI and like really, you know, I feel like CSI Barry would be more, I guess, recognizable than just random Wally. I have no clue what Wally was before, or like his secret identity back in the day. But when I did that, I was like, this is exactly how I felt. So this is a huge issue.
Is this a first appearance?
I believe it is.
When I got the reveal of who it is, and I was trying to figure this out, I could not find any useful data.
Yeah, I also did not see anything on her name. So that's indication number one for you guys. This reveal was a woman. So, you know, the last issue when they took off the helmet, you only saw the back of the head. Everybody's like, oh, it's Jason Todd. Oh, no, it's Tim Drake. Oh, no, it's Rick Grayson. Like, everybody threw everything out there. And I think...
Now, in the last issue, I feel like they kind of played a swerve with using shadow work.
Oh, yeah.
Where the back of the head was black.
Yeah. And then now her hair is blonde.
Oh, look at you. Because what a way to tease everything and kind of get you to do horrible, you know, like what we did with our guesses. We were way off.
That was totally off.
Actually embarrassing. So, but they did a great job with doing, you know, where they can kind of say like, oh, no, it was shadows from, you know, the back of the helmet. Because when you look at what I saw first, that it was a female, that surprised me because I was like, dude. Whoa, this is definitely not Dick Grayson, okay, with the whole... Man, because you had the whole Court of the Owls and the Pledge. I was like, bro, this is going to be awesome.
Oh, yeah.
That's not it.
Like, this is why speculation is always a bad thing, people. Whether it be trying to speculate on what comic is going to be a big, you know, selling point, or whether it be introduction to characters...
Well, it depends, because speculation can be fun, but, for example, like us, we're like, whoa, that came out of left field, but we're open.
Yes.
Then there's others who are, you know, kind of, I don't want to say anything, kind of like what happened with The Last Jedi, where you're speculating, well, maybe that was a year of speculating between The Force Awakens, like, who's Rey's parents?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And then you kind of, everyone's speculating, oh, her parents were nobody's. And now everyone hated the movie. Like, that was such a huge thing because people could not stand that their fan theories didn't go. Like, speculation could be fun as long as you're rational and, you know, like, let's just have a conversation about what it came. I mean, it doesn't necessarily only have to reach us and our guests.
Yeah.
So, like, that's the thing. But when I saw, I'm like, the character, I was like, wait, but her hair's blonde. The hair's black. I'm like, you bastards tricking me with freaking shadows.
Yeah.
And I feel like they actually do that because when they introduce who Astrid is, I won't say the last name.
Yeah, because they do say her name in the middle of the book, and I'm like, huh. I wonder who that is.
Astrid? I'm like, I have no idea. I'm like, is this like Leslie Tompkins' daughter? Because like, why would Damien care about who this lady is?
Yeah.
And he like, even says that. He's like, you could take the helmet off. I still don't know who you are.
That's what I thought. Like, I thought this was going to be – I immediately thought when – I saw this, I was like, oh, so, you know, maybe it's somebody from the League of Assassins that he recognizes or something.
Yeah.
But it wasn't even that. Damien's like, I don't care whose face you're wearing. I don't know who you are. But the really crazy thing is she is recruiting criminals to do her bidding.
Yeah.
In regards of everybody in Arkham. But also her henchmen, because the henchmen were like, hey, this person, you know, Damien broke my arm, you know, a couple months ago. Yeah, they broke my, you know, whatever. And they got really in detail of like the vertebrae and things like that. And Damien is like, oh, okay. I thought I recognized some of your voices. Cool. Screw you guys. And they like shoot him with arrows and stuff. But Astrid is really quick to say, you know, this is not what we're supposed to be doing.
She's chopping off hands.
She cuts off somebody's hand, which I thought was really awesome.
And I love Damien. He's like, I'd get that cauterized if I were you.
Yeah. But she lets Damien go. Batman finds Robin. But we see that Astrid gives these people her, like, her Knights of the Sun or whatever, a kind of, like, they're in ritual, and they get, what is his name? They get Dr. Phosphorus to burn these people and have a mark on their back. And, like, when this happens, she tells everybody to breathe in their skin. That is gross.
Yeah.
I literally wrote that down. I was like, breathe their skin? Ugh. Like, it's just like, yeah. She is clearly not in her right mind, which makes me question, you know, the reveal at the end here. We see that Batman gets all the information from Damian. They're questioning what's all going on with this person. But when they are able to reach the basically sanctuary type place, not the sanctuary that we know of here in Heroes in Crisis, but the headquarters of where the Arkham Knight usually is, that we saw in the very beginning of 1001.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, she's not here. And this person says, of course, that's because they'll follow my daughter, Astrid Arkham, to the ends of the earth. And we see Dr. Arkham.
Yeah.
And it's...
Yeah, that was an interesting reveal. Because I'm like, oh, okay, you know what? I'm still not understanding the medieval aspect, but I can imagine that, you know, like Jeremiah, you know, they've, like, Dr. Arkham has probably has said some crazy stories, or she has witnessed some crazy things happening with Batman and what he's done and how he's never really, you know, the same thing as always. Like, you just put him in Arkham, but then they come back out. It's like, you don't really care about, like, I can kind of see where there could be a potential motivation.
Mm-hmm.
And for all that we know, like, I can imagine seeing all these classic moments that we've seen in Arkham Asylum, where they could probably now just go back to it and show her as, like, a little girl witnessing the things, because she was with her dad. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I can see that. So I thought it was a good, it was interesting. Like, I liked it.
And it's weird because, you know, we clearly see that, you know, Astrid has this idea that, like, most people that aren't in full agreement of Batman see Batman as the cause of majority of the darkness that's in Gotham. There has always been an argument that if Batman had not come about, then, you know, Joker, Two-Face, Riddler, Penguin, none of them would have come out either. And I think that's kind of the route that Astrid is going to be taking, that if, you know, we actually let Gotham shine in the sun, you know, and become a normal society without Batman, then there shouldn't be any other danger to the city. So it's a very, very interesting take on it. I do have to say this. I hated Damian from the very beginning of when he was introduced. I did not like the idea of Damian. But I do have to say, Damian is a complete badass.
Oh, well, I mean, he's always been a badass. He's just been a douche about it.
See, and that's why I never saw it as being a badass. I just saw it as, oh, you just being a, you know, stupid brat all the time. I can't, you know, recognize this badassery. But with this issue, I really, really enjoyed it. Just because I love Brad Walker's art. Like, I know a lot of people are not liking the eye shields and the, like, sorry, excuse me.
That's, like, your favorite part.
Yeah, that's my favorite part of the whole thing. I love the shading of, like, there's a gloss to the Bat costume and the Robin costume that I really, really enjoy. So it's just a new take on the character now.
I would be honest. Like, I prefer Brad Walker with what he was doing with Aquaman at the start of Rebirth. Like, I think that he does a better Aquaman than he does a Batman, but I don't have an issue with the way that, because I've actually liked some of the very subtle details that he provides. Like, I loved in the issue with Batman getting shot by all those arrows that they're actually showing the, you know, the suit getting ripped and showing the actual armor.
Yeah.
Like, those small little things I've really enjoyed. The eye shields look cool. I mean, it's not my favorite look for Batman, but I would say that he does... I believe he does a better Damian Wayne than he does a Batman. In terms of look. Like, for me, like, I like how he does Damian better.
Mm-hmm.
But with Damian with me was... I never... The thing with Damian is I think that what helped me was at first I didn't like him. Like, he was okay. He just felt like a younger Jason Todd, kind of like that bratty kid. You're like, dude, I just want you to die. Like, just die. But it was like, if you read Grant Morrison's Batman and Robin with Dick Grayson as Batman, and that was the duo, then at least for some, I feel like that's the story that for many made people think of Damian as kind of like a household name.
Yeah.
And then those who still hated him, I think that like Super Sons kind of changed some people's mind. Because Super Sons became, it was kind of funny seeing him and Jonathan together.
I for sure changed my mind a lot after reading more of Super Sons and what was the other one that he was?
Teen Titans?
I guess the start of Teen Titans Rebirth were the two that got me a little bit more interested in Damian for sure. Just because I got back into reading comics in New 52. So
okay.
I still got him at the end of his like douchebaggery, and I was just like, I don't like this. And then I stopped reading, and I didn't read when he came back from dying and all that. So that's something I still need to catch up on. But really enjoyed his character here. I love the team dynamic, you know, of both Batman and Robin. And I know that Tomasi did write a lot of Batman and Robin in the beginning of New 52. So I am seeing that he's going back to his roots of that story and kind of taking it here. But what book are we going to go to next?
Well, I really enjoyed, I know that you kind of said that, that Outsiders was your favorite book. Like, my favorite book was Hawkman. I forgot to say that. Anyways, but my runner up would have been, The Flash, number 70, year one. Which was Joshua Williamson, Hi-Fi on Colors, Howard Porter, who is, to me, Howard Porter is probably one of the greatest Flash artists for me. Him, I love him. I love Scott Collins. But mainly Howard Porter is kind of like my go-to guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed this. Like, when I was reading the book, I was really curious to see what year one was going to be. Even though, you know, it's like year one. Okay, I'm guessing it's going to be... When I read this, I felt like it was... a Geoff Johns Secret Origins title, like he did with Superman and what he did with Green Lantern. It's in the middle of a run. I mean, this is issue 70.
Yeah.
And you're getting like a Secret Origins. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I think that this is my big thing is I'm curious. Sometimes I wonder on timing. Like, why are we now giving a Barry Allen origin story?
Well,
with subtle twists.
I have a theory on that that I actually asked Williamson. He hasn't responded on Twitter yet, so
okay.
But we'll talk about it at the end because it has to do with the end. So
okay, so you know, you get some really cool moments with Barry and his mom. In this issue, it looks like Barry's a little bit older than how they usually portray when the murder happens, like before the murder happens.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know exactly, but you get the 15 years later, you're seeing kind of him being the crime scene investigative guy with that normal little thread of him always being late. You're getting to see August again.
Mm-hmm.
You get to see Detective Singh. So you're seeing pretty much the cast. You're getting Iris again, who's kind of like that hotshot, where you can kind of see there's a little bit of the chemistry between them. And, you know, all in all, things are really good. I mean, it's kind of a very familiar story.
Yeah, if honestly...
Unless, you know, you haven't watched the CW show, for those who don't read the comics.
Exactly. I was exactly going to say that. If you want to know what this book was, it is basically the first, like, five episodes of... the very first season of The Flash. It's where he is basically testing out everything he can do, and he's learning everything that he can do.
I love the Flash, like in the cover, the Flash t-shirt with the jeans, because it felt very like Action Comics #1, how Superman looked in the New 52.
Yeah.
But I loved how he was just like going through shoes all the time because his shoes
were melting.
Were going. Yeah, you got the when he was in the hospital and he fell and like the lunch fell. I got like Spider-Man 1, like Sam Raimi vibes when he caught Mary Jane and he does all the stuff with the lunch. I was like, oh, that was cool. Like, I got that. I don't know, man. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think the book was gorgeous, but it's that
I really
you know, that part that you I know that you're gonna mention now.
I really enjoyed this. I will say he did change one thing that I always questioned. But so when he's testing out his powers,
yeah,
he says it right here. He's like trying to read a book as fast as he can, and he said Barry Allen, smartest man alive, and the information is leaving his brain just as quickly as he's reading it. So in the past, when there was buildings being completely demolished when he was fighting care of his villains,
his architecture, like he can figure it.
He would run to the nearest library, read every book on architecture, plus read the old blueprints of what the building used to be like, and he would rebuild it. Now, according to this, he can no longer do that.
Well, I'm guessing that something like this is, again, he's still testing everything out. So I would like to, I mean, I would have to see if that, because that's a big thing, because Barry Allen was always one of those guys that when it came to all the collateral damage, he always fixed it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that which is really cool. So I'm kind of hoping that this is a little bit of, like, you know, him with his shoes. You know, with the shoes. Like, he just kept on burning them out. Where his brain, now he kind of has to understand how to process all this information.
I guess in the same page, it kind of answers it for us. Because at the very bottom of the page, he's actually building a car. So,
true.
It might have just been, like, him being like, okay, well, maybe I have to read it faster and, you know, use that information, like, almost immediately. So I can understand that. And plus, like everybody says, like, when he runs faster, time is slowing down. So he has that much more time to use that information. So,
yeah. No, so I thought it was really cool. And then when he's realizing everything that's going on with the shoes, he remembered about these Wayne Tech fireproof, like, jackets and, like, these, like, special boots. And he's like, well, let's kind of, like, tap out. Let's see how these shoes. And that's one of my favorite panels, when you're kind of seeing him from his, like, his determined face to the, oh, crap, like, I'm actually running really fast. And then you see, like, he's really enjoying it. But you kind of see, like, when he's tapping into the Speed Force.
Yeah.
And then, of course, that's like the coolest, you know, that white page.
Oh yeah, I love,
like, the crocoon, like that was
he you could clearly see that this is where it's going, you know, he entered the Speed Force, and
yeah,
with entering the Speed Force usually means time travel. But I love this because it shows the realism of, you know, everybody assumes that once you get super speed you just automatically know how to, like, control it and stuff. So it's like, yeah. But he didn't, and so he, you know, he fell, he could not stop, but he ends up being in the future. And Turtle, as we all know, he, mm-hmm, as a baby, has cameoed in Justice League recently with the,
yep, he's been hanging
Force
out with Grodd, right?
Yeah, with the Still, yeah, Force. We see that he now has an army in the future. And somebody saves Barry and all these citizens, and it is Barry Allen of the future.
And I love that he's like, when are we going to learn how dangerous
time travel
is?
Exactly. So this is the exact thing that I was talking about, how I think it's going to tie into something. So I don't know if you remember this, because I know you were reading The Flash before, you know, the Flash War and all this, and how it kind of just got mangled into who knows what else. But Joshua Williamson wrote a story right before all that mess, issue 26.
Oof, man, that was a long time ago.
It
save the story, and then I'll...
So
I don't have that kind of recollection.
In the very beginning of that story was a piece of the future where you saw Barry Allen, Iris, and the twins. You saw all four of them. And so I was like, do you think that they would mess up continuity and change the way Flash looks in the future for this story? So I went back, I looked at issue 26, and it's the exact same character design. So it's within the same time period.
Yeah, I'm trying to look through all of my comics now to see. And for some reason, I can't even find it. What the hell? How do I go from 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, and then it goes 20? That's crap. Out of all the friggin' issues for you to mention, and it shows, like, I can't even find it in my library. That's caca, man.
Oh, man. Do you not have it?
Apparently not. Which is, maybe because I have the physical copy, but... I'll do some research on it and look into it, because right now my memory is not like that when it comes to comics. For some reason I can remember baseball players and their statistics, but I can't remember everything that these comics tell me.
See, and that's one thing about me. I love sports, but I'm not very much into them anymore. I'm very much into comics, so. Yeah. And plus, I used to work at a comic shop, so comics is basically the only thing I ever did, ever. So, I have all this useless information.
Useless? What are you talking about, man?
But
you are a wealth of knowledge.
I know, a guy at work called me the Wikipedia of comic books, so I was like, oh, thanks. But I really would enjoy, because in that issue, in issue 26, I remember there being, like, a weird kind of... like storm, and so I want to know if, like, maybe Barry might accidentally be the cause of that storm or what. Like, I don't know. I'm once again speculation, but we will see. I'm really interested. This is a completely different turn from what we were getting in earlier Flash issues. This is definitely getting me back into the book. I'm excited to see where it goes. And I hope that the hype of year one does not crash near the end. That's all I'm hoping for.
Ooh. All right. Well, we'll I'm gonna look at it. I'm still looking through my thing right now. But man, I can't find it, and that's driving me nuts because I don't understand how I can have the entire collection, but I don't have 26 and 27. That just doesn't make sense to me. Anyways, I'll find it. But dude, the Batman Who Laughs, number 5. I read this book, and honestly, I feel like I was getting. Though I think the worst thing that I can do was that I read Scott Snyder's tweet first, where he's like, "Oh wow, I really appreciate everybody that saw what I was doing with the red letters."
I did the exact same thing.
Damn it, bro. All I was doing was that I'm reading the beginning. I'm like, I'm not quite myself today. Okay, myself. Then the next time is like myself, time, 10. I was like doing something like, is there some kind of like a...
I thought there was like a hidden message throughout the entire book.
Oh my God.
So I was like...
So I was reading this comic and I was like, dude.
I really wanted to like write everything down, but I was like, I'm going to waste way too much time if I do this.
Exactly. So I was just in my... So I did it only on the first page and I'm like, myself, time. 10 form, but then I'm like, ID, like, okay, this doesn't make sense. But then it's like, you know, when I'm like, okay, I'm not gonna do this because I'm going like five, even though I told myself I wasn't gonna do it, I kept on doing it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like,
same here.
It was like my unofficial, like, still doing it kind of thing because I really wanted to know, dude, okay, what are the red letters telling me? I'm like, is this like a... But then, you know, I you know, you finally understand, like, what Scott's trying to do in regards to what the Batman Who Laughs and what his influence and everything is happening to Bruce, the Bruce that we know, and how it's kind of like little by little you can kind of see pieces of Bruce is being lost and being consumed by the Batman Who Laughs, which I'm like, hell yeah. Like, I'm down for it.
Yeah.
Like, I know we were talking on Twitter. I know I was talking with Brennan. I don't know who. I think it was Rob Reads Comics, and someone else. And I think we were talking about when we heard about, like, the Batman Superman, the new series. And we were kind of, like, just talking about our thoughts on the Batman Who Laughs as a character. And is it, like, how do you feel about the character? Do you feel that he has warranted being this huge piece and this huge threat to the DC universe? Or do you think that they're playing him a little bit too much? Like, I mentioned the word overkill. And now, I don't mean the overkill as much as the word overkill means.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm putting him, like I said on Twitter, I'm putting the Batman Who Laughs as a character that I enjoy. But he's kind of getting to, like, that cosmic Ghost Rider where you're just seeing him too much.
Yes. So I understand from what I understand is writers get royalties for the characters that, of course, they create.
Yeah, but it can't be derivative of anyone.
And
this is, yeah, because that's the thing. Like, it has to be, like, Mr. Bloom is, like, that's 100% original.
Yeah.
But the thing is that the Batman Who Laughs, I mean, his name's Batman Who Laughs, he's derivative of Batman and of Joker. So it's kind of like, it has to be where you're not getting a concept from anyone, because if not, it's not truly like your, well, it is your own creation, but you don't get, like, the royalties for it.
Oh, so he may not even be getting royalties for this.
No, I think this is just, I think people just see how popular he is now, the Batman Who Laughs in cons. And, I mean, Scott Snyder's books show what, like, sales mean for just the actual book.
Yeah, I mean, it has been in the top 10 for each month, so.
I mean, Dark Knight's Metal was huge. His first appearance was nuts, like, the way people were trying to. So, it could just be that they're riding the train right now.
Oh, for sure.
It's super hot. I think that's what it, I mean, unless I'm wrong, but I don't remember who it was, but there was a certain creator that was really pissed off with DC. Because he created a character and he's never gotten royalties for it. And it's because the argument is that that character seems to be influenced by certain other characters, where it's like, that's technically not an actual creation because you use somebody else's inspiration to create yours. And then that's kind of, that's like the loophole they created for themselves.
That's interesting. Well, if that's the case, then I'm going to go in the boat of we may be seeing a little too much of him.
I mean, I could be wrong. So just say what your thoughts were anyways, because
so,
I could be wrong.
So for me,
what
I thought was Snyder is, because let me just tell everybody out there that is interested in going into the comics industry, and I'm sure most writers and artists will tell you the same thing. It's something that they enjoy. Don't get me wrong. For me, I am writing a script right now for my own comic book. It is not the greatest paying job, from what I've heard, from what I've researched.
No, that's why you see some of our favorite ones going to a gazillion cons.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, if Scott was to get royalties from the Batman Who Laughs, this is a guy who, let's just temporarily jump into his personal life really quick. He just had a kid. So that makes, I think, kid number 3 or 4. Kids are expensive. You know this.
He's paying for a brand new writing studio that's currently being built, which is super cool, by the way.
Brand new writing studio. He has a lot on his plate that is not cheap for anybody, not just a comics writer, but for anybody. So he's going to have to hustle. That hustle being, hey, this character gets me this much money each month. Let me see if I can put him in anything else. That's why we are seeing him in this book. That's why he is still a looming threat in the Justice League story. And in the Batman verse, I keep saying Batman versus Superman, but the Batman Superman title
it's
that
it's a great movie. You could say BVS,
but the title that is coming out in August, he is also going to be a part of that, which I believe is a tie-in to the Year of the Villain, anyways, which was something that Snyder with other writers built. So I think that this whole thing is just Scott trying to really hustle for his money. And I can appreciate that because it does take a lot to be in that industry. So on that level, I respect it. But in a reader's perspective, I feel like I'm seeing him a little too much.
Yeah, so that ultimately that's my thing, and I kind of I like things to get, you know, like spread out a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So this issue was a lot of fun because when I at the beginning of the issue you have the ramifications of the Batman Who Laughs ended up cornering Batman with all these guards saying that he is indeed the Batman Who Laughs, and now he's trying to escape and not hurt these people, or, you know, obviously them not hurt him. And I loved how he was like screaming and he's legitimately telling his business, these guards' business to them, but they just did. He's like, no, he knows, you know, it's like it's this kind of thing. And he's like, I know who you guys are, like I am Batman, like believe me. It's kind of hard to believe it when his eyes are all bloodshot red.
Yeah, and that's he's
clearly not acting like himself.
But that is when he basically says to himself, you know, we have to, I have to, you know, take this as far as I can to survive. And so he basically embodies the Batman Who Laughs. And that's when he, you know, he describes it as, you know, him just yelling and then they stop shooting. And they ask him, wait, what did you say? And he starts spewing it all out. Hey, I know who you are. I know where you live. I know that you sleep with this.
He's like, I will come for you.
you sleep with always double checking the window because you know that, you know, somebody might be watching. And like saying all this creepy stuff. And I'm like, holy crap. Like he's actually he's like, doing
maybe
this.
Maybe not tonight. Maybe tonight. Maybe tomorrow.
Maybe 10 years from now.
I will come for you. And everyone you love, and I will make what happened to this Bruce Wayne here look like a damn mercy.
Yeah.
I'm like, good grief.
And he picks up his head. He picks up the Bruce Wayne's head. And he says, because I'm the bleeping Batman Who Laughs. And I'm like, holy crap.
Well, like, I loved first because you see how he kind of wrote, like, why?
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes when you see something like that, you don't know if he's saying, like, why did I just say that? Because I'm the mother. Or that's actually Bruce Wayne saying, like, why would you say that?
Yeah.
And now you just have the pissed off. So it's kind of like even little subtle things like that was just amazing. We find out that Jim Gordon did not lose a finger. So I'm going after Jock. Those freaking Robins bit him in the finger. He should be losing a finger. But I love how the Grim Knight was saying, like, well, they're all versions of your son. He's like, take a deep look. I didn't see that, but I'm guessing he's doing it to play with Jim.
Yeah, probably.
To mess with, like, a mental gymnastic kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, seeing these Robins coming after him, when I heard, the thing was crazy is that you actually hear it one time, because all you've ever heard him say is Crow.
Yeah.
But there's one time you're hearing Gordon actually screamed, like, James, please.
And they say, Dad.
Dad. I was like, what? But then you got nothing but these headshots, and he's like, James, no. And then you see that, you know, James Gordon, the one that we all know, Black Mirror, is there. And, man, this is kind of like when the book started to get really nuts. Because now you get the Batman Who Laughs, and he gets encountered by the Court of Owls.
Yeah, so this I thought was really, really cool. Batman Who Laughs walked in on his own And he's like, hey, I have a proposition for you guys. And they're like, we know who you are. We are just going to kill you. So I think this is going to be the best for us. And they're like, well, let's keep it with tradition. We get the youngest and we ask them what to do. And this is cool because the youngest at the time when I first read Court of the Owls was this little girl. Now I see that this youngest is an, like, she clearly looks like not,
like maybe like in her teens.
Yeah, not young. It looks like a teenager. So I'm guessing if it's the same person. I think that would be kind of cool.
Was she in a wheelchair?
I don't remember there being a wheelchair, but I also remember Batman, like, completely messing everybody up. So there might be a reason why she's in a wheelchair.
Okay.
But she's like, oh, well, I want his head.
Like, yeah, let's get the talons on him.
Like, I want his head. I'm going to use it as a nightlight. And we're just going to stick the talons. And he's like, oh, well, that's the kind of thing I wanted to let you guys know. I already dealt with them. And you just see them all come out with, like, no arms and stuff. And so
it looked very Walking Dead to me.
Yes.
I know I keep on saying Walking Dead, but this kind of looked just like when Michonne's first appearance, where she has them on the chain and both of the walkers don't have arms.
Yeah.
And it's something about that page that just looks gloriously, like, you know, classic. And
so all the Court of the Owls, they all run in panic. And that little girl, the teenager, she's like, you know, please don't hurt me. I'll do whatever you want. I'll give you everything you want. And he's like, oh, well, all I ever wanted was to hear you scream when I kill you. And, like, he kicks the wheelchair out into the water.
Ugh.
And she does. She screams on her way down. And he explains, like,
yeah,
there is one Earth where I actually took all of you guys down, but instead of destroying you, I became one of you. And you see a Bruce Wayne that actually has the talent suit and is fighting him. And he quickly, you know, pretty much doesn't he, like, I can't remember if he kills him or not, or if you even see
no,
the
I
end
don't
of
think
that
he
fight.
Does. I mean, he does hurt him.
Yeah.
Because at the end, when he was really hurt, he was kind of like saying, like, who are you? Like I said, who are you? And he's like, I don't. And then you're getting more of the inner dialogues again, saying,
yeah,
kind of like,
and so,
I don't recognize myself anymore.
Yeah. And then it jumps to, you know, our Bruce Wayne and how he meets up with Gordon and James at the Batcave. And this is also where things start to get very real. And this very much, this is the only part where I truly felt that this was still a fight between Batman and Joker.
Yeah.
This felt very Joker-esque. And there has been times where Joker has been one step or two steps ahead of Batman. And this is where he is figuring it all out. Like, this is not right. This was way too easy. Why is it, you know, being so easy? And that's when the Batman Who Laughs calls, lets him know, you know, they have a huge argument of what their plan is. And
yeah,
Batman Who Laughs tells him, he's like, hey, you see it. Like, look at this map again and really look at it. You know what this is and you have no idea how to stop it. And basically convinces Bruce to go along with it. And
even before that, I'm curious, because when he's trying to convince him, you actually see that there's a moment where it looks like James Gordon's going to get impaled.
Yeah.
Where it looks like actual moments, like,
if you
things,
see,
like, spikes from the cave.
But you see the spikes in the cave fall, and then the very next page, you see that there's debris on the ground. So he's probably stuck under there.
Yeah.
I think they both are. I think both James and Gordon are both stuck under debris. Alfred is away from the Batcave, so he can't necessarily stop him. He's trying to stop him just by, you know, talking in his earpiece or whatever. And you see Bruce crying throughout this entire thing. And he's
ugh,
just like, and his last words, through your eyes. And it freaking initiates it. And that's the end, dude. So it's,
oh, man. Yeah, this book was an absolute emotional roller coaster. Like, there's... And that's the thing, man. Scott Snyder, it's, you know, there's a lot of words where, you know, there's a lot of exposition. People can kind of complain about it. But no matter what there is in terms of the length, how much words they are, he always finds a way to wrap everything up so cleverly where he still wants you begging for more. But the thing is just, this is what's special about, and I'm really appreciative of DC giving Scott, I mean, obviously his numbers have allowed him to continue, but it's just, it tells you just how special of a time it is for, like, Batman fans specifically, and even just for DC fans, to have a writer like this, because I know it's kind of, like, preposterous, but I feel like, you know, sometimes when you're in the middle of sports, like, you know, I lived in South Florida during the Big 3 days with LeBron James, Chris Bosh, and Dwayne Wade. And it's kind of like, you know, you get there, championship one, two. The thing is like, when you're in the middle of it, you start to take things for, like, granted. Mm-hmm. And you don't understand what you're actually going through. Like, people hate on LeBron James, but when LeBron James leaves and he retires, that's a huge void that's going to be left in the NBA a while.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. I feel like I just want to cherish everything that Scott Snyder does, because when he's done with this Justice League art, I know by, I think, the summer of next year, I know that he wants to just work on his creator-owned stuff. And you know what it's like if you're not going to be seeing Scott Snyder monthly in your DC world for a while? You're going to miss it.
Oh, and I feel like a lot of people did miss him when he jumped on to All-Star Batman, and then it ended. Yep. You know, we didn't really see a whole lot. I know that the Dark Knight's metal kind of, you know, set the void, you know, opened up the void, you know, to having his work done. And, you know, that small miniseries afterward, Batman and the Signal. But, like you said.
And you're going to get it soon. Like, you, people hate on Tom King all they want. Man, this guy's Batman story is almost done. And it's like, what's next, you know?
Exactly.
And that's the thing, because... So, we'll see, man. But I love what he's doing. I love that this has all started from the beginning of New 52 to where it is now. There's so many Easter eggs. It's just, it's beautiful to see how he's mapped out this, you know, 10-year story.
For sure. I do have to say this. This is the, because we announced our winner last week. This is the first week that we're going to be doing a question. And I don't want to ask this question out of negativity towards Scott, but just to hear everybody else's opinion. You know, we had asked if we are seeing too much of the Batman Who Laughs. I want to know, for everybody out there listening, are we seeing too much of the Batman Who Laughs? If we are, I want to know why. But also, to add a little bit more to this question, has there been a character in your mind... So, in your opinion, has there been a character that you saw too much when they were first created?
Cool. Okay. And again, post those answers onto our show tweet when we announce the show. Mention it there. You can email us as well at comicbooklegion.com. Oh, geez. That's our website. comicbooklegion@gmail.com.
Correct.
Yes. I mean, I know Clayton sends a post on his what's your Twitter?
My Twitter is @fanboyclay. You can you know, put the answer on my retweet. You can put the answer on Mark's retweet. If you have us personally on your Twitters, you can, you know, direct message us through the Comic Book Legion Twitter, Mark's or my own. But where can they follow you, Mark?
Yeah, you guys can follow me at Mark Fosses. I'm thinking of doing, like, Mark Reads Comics. So many people do the Reads Comic thing. I'm like, why do people, like, my last name's, like, irrelevant. So I might change it, but I'll probably keep Mark just so that if they type at Mark, you know, my little avatar thing would pop up and they'll know it's me.
Yeah.
But at the moment right now, at Mark Fosses, or you can reach me at @CB_Legion. Well, you can reach either Clay and I under that one, or... at the moment, we're, you know, we still have the at Nation of Nerds Twitter handle. We might be doing something where we might be switching the CB underscore Legion towards and merge it with the Nation of Nerd ones and just have, you know, so we can just have a big following that we already have established with Nation of Nerds. Just get them all together and, you know, we can all hug each other and, you know, sing Kumbaya together.
Exactly. And just a reminder, if you guys are interested in joining a writing community, we do have openings for our Comic Book Legion website. It's not just DC. You can review any books, whether that be Boom, Image, Dark Horse, IDW, DC, Marvel, you know, anything under the sun. I know that we had Kevin do a review on Shazam a while back. So if you want to do movies reviews, I know Blake did a Mortal Kombat review also. So video games are something that we would like to touch up on as well. But just let us know, whether it be via email, Twitter, or direct message.
That was beautifully said. So with that being said, Clay, do you have anything else to tell our amazing listeners?
No. All I have to say is this one thing. Keep buying Hawkman so it does not get canceled.
Keep buying Hawkman. Keep buying Hawkman. You know what? We got to get Hawkworld at Hawkworld Tim Board, who I know is the biggest Hawkman fan I know. We're going to get some t-shirts.
Oh,
I'm just going to pass them out.
That would be awesome.
Go to an Atlanta Hawks game. Just say, well, they got eliminated a while ago. So during, their spring, summer workouts or something, I'm just going to give, you know, keep reading Hawkman.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. So, sweet. So with that being said, we will talk to you guys next. Wait, actually, does Doomsday Clock come out next week? Because I know it's always, like, delayed.
At the end of the month.
Mother bleeber.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's fine, too. for now. But, all right, sweet. So, if anything, we will talk to you guys next week.
All right. See you later.